Welcome back to Roaming with Restless Women. I'm Julie Noonan, your host. Today, I have a very special guest with me. Her name is Michelle Moffitt. Michelle is a licensed therapist, Enneagram expert, and an author. She has written a book called Cracked Open: A Journey to a Resilient and Independent Mindset, a book that she share in which she shares her personal journey of leaving a high control system to inspire growth, self-trust, and transformation. Michelle integrates science-backed strategies with the power of storytelling to help people navigate anxiety, feeling stuck, struggling with their identity struggles, and wrestling with trauma. Beyond her professional life, Michelle is a mother to five remarkable adult humans and lives in the Pacific Northwest with her handsome partner. Outside of work, you'll find her in coffee shops, exploring cultures through food and travel, or cheering on her favorite teams from the bleachers. I'm with you on the bleachers situation. Welcome, Michelle.
Thanks for having me, Julie. It's great to be here.
Well, I'm really excited to get to talk to you about helping people through their trauma, whatever that trauma happens to be. So let's start talking about, you mentioned you went through a process to leave a high control system. Can you describe to me what you mean by a high control system? What are the characteristics?
Sure. High control, the particular system I was a part of, left women with very little voice, specifically, and also children. So there was a hierarchy of the way things were done. It was a power structure, intended to keep a few people in power and basically fear-based. So and the particular system I was a part of was also religious, so they had a God card associated with their leadership or their authority, saying that this was what God told them to do. And so you're in these systems and you kind of feel brainwashed. And I would say I got gut washed in the system. I learned to not trust myself.
Oh, wow. That is a gut wash. That is great. Especially for people like me who are intuitive. So
Yes.
if I'm feeling that blanket on top of me of the control and the fear, that's a perfect way to describe it.
Yeah, and so you learn to not trust yourself.
100%.
Yeah, and there's a pathology, if you will, around these systems that they're certain, right? They're very black and
Oh.
white in the way they think. This is right and this is wrong. This is in and this is out. And so you start believing and thinking in those terms. And if you're not right, you're wrong. And if you're not in, you're out. And so the science with that is if we're designed to belong. And if we don't belong, we're not going to survive. And so they're using this control and this very black and white thinking of being certain and teaching you to not trust yourself or your intuition to keep you in the system because you're going to be out and you're not going to survive. It's so threatening. It's crazy to think about it on the outside of it, but when you're
Oh,
in it,
sure.
you're just like, okay, I got to follow the rules. Tell me how to do this.
I think a lot of us have been through situ control environments like that without realizing it. If you are part of a I don't know what you would call it, like a clique in high school, that clique is a control environment, and typically there are one or two, or just this little group of people who are in charge of everything. And one of the biggest fears of high school is being shunned and not belonging.
Yes, not
Right.
having anybody to eat lunch with.
Yes, that is like
The
huge.
worst.
But
And it
yeah.
becomes this, the psychological word for that is groupthink, right? Everybody needs to think the same. And I just think it's so interesting when you think about high school, our prefrontal cortexes are not formed yet. And so it's very easy to be in those spaces of going, oh, of course, just tell me how to show up. You like pink? I like pink too. You want to wear those flip-flops, I'm going to wear those flip-flops too, right? It's
Right.
so this influential, context. And then once our prefrontal cortexes get kind of fully developed by age 25 or 26, we can start making better decisions for our own self. We get to know who we actually are.
So what do you think about this influencer culture that we have right now? Do you feel like that there is a correlation between that and the increase in bullying that we see?
Ooh, yes. Well, and just the scrolling, we have, this is what is so hard for me. We have so many data points that say, this is not good for you. Do something different. Change your mind. And that was really the thing that I decided at age, 49, 50, I was going to change my mind. I was not going to be in this place anymore. But when we don't belong or we're influenced by someone else, which there's so much of that in the high control system. It's not just the word bullying isn't just reserved for high school. And again, I'm out. I don't have the right shoes. I don't say the right words. And somebody picks up on that out of power and removes somebody's individuality or removes somebody's purpose or their value as a person. Yeah, it's really harmful.
Huge, hugely harmful. So speaking of the current environment that we live in, influencers have become a big deal, even bigger now that obviously the internet. How do you feel like that? Is it kind of, to me, it feels more free with the internet. And what I mean by that is it's a false freedom because you feel like, oh, I'm free. I can go and say what I want, do what I want. I can have something go viral and I'll be rich tomorrow. And there's just it started out as being a freedom of intellectual exchange. How has it, in your opinion, become controlling? Or has that control always been there to some degree?
I would say a lot of it is based on our subconscious, right? So a lot of these thoughts that we're working through, we're not even conscious that we're doing it or we're trying to belong or we're in this space. We just go, oh, I'm just gonna get along or go along to get along, whatever that phrase is, right? Like, do this. Everybody else is. And so the influencing, we know the dopamine hits we get from doom scrolling. We know, all of this data around what happens when we're watching these influencers and not thinking independently. And so coming into this independent way of thinking is really about what am I subconsciously thinking about? Let's bring it into my conscious brain. It's like a dance step. Like, what's subconscious, bring it out. And
Yeah,
then
you
we
have
can
to think about
say,
it.
yeah, let me change, let me ask myself some questions about that. Is that really reflect my values? Does that really who I am? Does that any of those things? And so we can decide, actually, that's not aligned with who I am. And Julie, honestly, the first step is really figuring out who you are.
I was going to ask you, how do you figure out who you are? I mean, I'm
But
62 and I'm still figuring it out.
I think it's a lifelong journey, right? It's
There we
like we
go.
don't ever arrive at that place. But I think, for me, I really needed to kind of sit into this head, heart, and gut space. And so this part of my brain is my prefrontal cortex, and it tells me what's right and wrong, and it tells me to make pros and cons lists, and it gets counsel and research. My heart is where I have to listen to my body. And go, am I open or closed? What do I actually feel about this thing? And then, like you were talking, your intuition sits in your gut. And this is where we know the scientists are talking about our gut brain and how it gets cloudy if we're not focused on it. And this is the seat of our intuition or our true self or whatever you want to call it. And asking that part of yourself, what do I think about this thing in this moment? Not based on research or people's opinions. What do I want to do in this place? And as you start doing that, you start becoming more familiar with yourself, and also with the Enneagram, right? The Enneagram is a great way to get some words behind who you truly are and how you want to show up in the world.
So for the people on the or who are listening who don't know what an Enneagram is, can you explain that tool and how you use it in your practice?
Sure. Yeah. The Enneagram is kind of an ancient personality assessment, if you will. A lot of people use it at work. A lot of people are using it in maybe not the best way. And I would call that the trendiogram, where you're using it to say, well, I'm a, this type and you're stuck with me. So the Enneagram was really developed as a tool for growth. And in it, we can constantly see ways that we're showing up because of our motivation. So it looks at motivation and not behavior. And so, for instance, if there's nine types, and they're kind of this archetypes of characters or personalities in the world, nobody's static, stuck in a type, but you're going to present with the same type over your lifetime. But you can move, and we would call that getting aligned or integrated. And so you can move in growth or ungrowth, in while you're understanding this. So an example, if I was at Starbucks the other day, and sometimes they have a little chalkboard that asks questions while you're standing in line, and it said, would you rather a lion tamer or a trapeze artist? So what would you say, Julie?
Trapeze artist.
Okay, that was so fast.
Oh
And
yeah. I don't
why
do
would you be a
that.
trapeze artist?
I don't want to get eaten.
Oh, okay, so it's a fear-based motivation.
Yeah. I
Okay.
mean, plus flying through the air sounds great, but my first thought was I don't want to get eaten.
Okay. Yeah. So
Ha
I was there with my partner, and we both decided to be trapeze artists, but our motivation about being a trapeze artist was so different. And so that was the behavior. We'd both be trapeze artists, but the reason we got there was completely different. And so it's this insight into how we're showing up in the world and understanding that people are different, but also giving, again, words to who you are. So I was a trapeze artist because it sounded more fun, the flying through the air thing.
Yeah.
My partner was a trapeze artist because it was less risky than being a lion tamer. Like he was like, as long as they have nets to catch me, I could do that. But I don't know how to control a lion, so I don't. That's too risky, right? So you can see how we're showing up differently, and what it does is it helps you look at growth as well. Another example, one of my business partners, I would ping her all day. And I'm like, listen to this podcast. I got this great quote. Hey, this is really interesting, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh my gosh, it's like shotgun coming after me, right?
Oh.
And she's like, I think I need to figure out how to get along with you in this manner. And I was like, actually, I need to do better because my brain works like that. And so I'm like, blah, 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 blah. They call it monkey mind. And so I needed to recognize that's not helpful in our relationship, in a working relationship. So I'm gonna keep track on a document of all the interesting things I find out all week and all the podcasts and all the things. And I'm going to send her at the end of the week the ones that really matter.
There you go.
Right. And so it was understanding how I'm showing up to someone else so I can lean into growth. Right.
There you go. Well, one of the things that's funny that you say that, because one of the things I do when I start working with a new team on a project, or when I've had direct reports in my past, one of the very first things I ask and tell them is, how do I like to be communicated with, and how often? And because I'm someone who has a monkey mind like you, but I don't like to be inundated like that. I
Right.
want the summary at the end of the week. So
Right.
I
And
recognize that about myself.
there's points in it of going, how do I give and receive feedback based on who this other person is? How will
Oh,
they
for
best
sure.
hear me? How do we deal with conflict? All of those things come out of the Enneagram, but back to the who are you? It really gives words to your strengths, to like your coping mechanisms. I'm a type seven. My tendency, it's monkey mind. I'm a visionary. I am enthusiastic. I'm sunny side up. I don't like dealing with pain. And so I've had to learn to be emotional. I've had to learn to sit in harder times as a therapist, but that doesn't come naturally to me.
We could go all day on this. I know we could, because I'm fascinated by different measurements and tools that we use, me as a coach, you as a therapist, and how differently we use them. But talk to me a little bit about the book the cracked open, and what are the key elements that you learned during your progression that you are now sharing with your audience?
It's so interesting because, I wrote it, I'm 56. I wrote it this last year, and a lot of people asked me if it was kind of my midlife reckoning.
Oh yeah.
And I
Well,
think,
yeah, we do have kind of some of those sometimes.
right? And I think maybe it was. Maybe there was some
Yeah.
in there of recognizing I don't like where I'm at right now, and I don't have to be here. I can change my
Right.
mind. So the original title for my book was going to be I Changed My Mind, My Journey with Repentance. And like I said, my particular high control system was religious. And in the opening of the book, I find myself sitting in front of eight men and one woman, having to give a story or tell them what has been going on in my marriage for 25 years. And my marriage had been incredibly abusive and toxic, and I was married to a narcissist, and he was also the head pastor. And so there's really nowhere for me to go.
Wow,
And
talk about
so,
getting trapped.
yeah. And so
Yeah.
I'm sitting before them asking for help with this situation. It was my last resort because I'm like, I don't know who to go to. And they said, we don't believe you. You need to repent. And so at that point, I was like, okay, repentance means I'm going the wrong way, and now I need to go the right way. So the right way is I need to sit down and shut up, is what they're asking me to do. And so in that moment, I was like, I'm gonna change my mind. I'm gonna change my mind that that's what I have to do, or that the world is black and white, or that there's not a way to think through this in a complex manner. And it ended up me not being a part of the system anymore, which was terrifying, because I
Sure,
was,
yeah.
leaving this community that I had been a part of for my entire adult life. But also gave me the freedom to go, I can change my mind and then I can change it again. I can
Yes.
try something, and if I don't like it, I can try something else. Right. And so the book is really this memoir meets toolbox of how do we do this? Because the pathology for people is that we always follow the same kind of thing. So if you're stuck, or you're stuck in a career you don't like, or you're stuck in a city you don't like, or you feel stuck in a friendship, or whatever it is that's keeping you from being your fullest version of yourself, there's tools in there to help think through that, and recognize that there's a larger world out there for you.
How did you screw up that courage?
I think I just ate that elephant.
Oh my, all at one
Right.
time, no doubt.
Yeah, I think things were bad
Wow.
enough, right, that I just was like, I can't do this anymore. I just can't. And I think, again, this is the thing where we see billboards that say, hey, if you stop doing this behavior, your life would be better. And I'm always going, what I think we all want change. I think we all want better lives, but what is that point that we will step into change, that we will step into recognizing there can be something better, but it's scary and it's uncomfortable.
So I'm a consultant and I do change management consulting. So I take huge groups of people through this process, and not in as scary or transcendental or personal ways, but people only will only move from where they are now to a new thing. If either they see the benefit of the new thing and it's going to give them something better than what they have now and they believe that, or the pain in the current situation is worse than the
Absolutely.
thought of going to the new situation. So I hit it from both directions when I work with groups of people, but I'm sure, and when I coach, I do it on a individual level, obviously. But what kind of pain have you worked through with some of your clients, especially women, over the last several years?
I mean, I think the number one, if we're on the Family Feud and it's like, what are
Yeah.
the answers coming up here? The number
Right.
one is that women don't know themselves, right? They have been
Wow,
trained to
yeah.
show up in a certain way. The word sacrifice comes up a lot for women, like self-sacrificing or don't be selfish, right? And it's like, okay, drawing boundaries is not selfish, right? Drawing boundaries is saying, here's where I end and you begin. And I need to put the oxygen mask on for me first. So even with the Enneagram, a lot of times I'll have the women take that and they'll assess as a type two, which is the helper. And
Yeah.
oftentimes I'll be like, can you do it again? I want you to do it when you feel free. And so the helper is this, like, I'm supposed to give to everybody all the time, and that's how I'm supposed to show up in the world. And so that's the number one thing I find is their identity issues. And then it's scary to go, well, how do I best show up in the world if I don't know myself? Right. And
Right.
I like the 2%, like just try something 2%. Lots of kindness.
Oh, I love that.
Right.
Anybody
Anybody
can do
might
2%, right?
anybody can do 2%.
There you
And
go.
normalizing, like you said, normalizing that change is uncomfortable. And okay, it's uncomfortable for everybody, but let's try.
I'd like to ask, what's the absolute worst case scenario?
Yes.
And
Yes.
typically, I say, is somebody going to die?
Right.
Now, I can't ask that in the healthcare situation.
Yeah.
However, what's the worst case scenario? I could, if they're worried about finances, I could be homeless. Right. How far away are you from that?
Right. Yeah.
And there are lots and lots and lots of options that you can do before you get there. There's plenty of people that can help you do that.
Right.
So it's generally speaking, when I'm working with within change in organizations, I will ask whole groups of people, what's the worst case scenario? What can happen? It usually comes back down to I could lose my job because I'm not going to be able to do the new thing.
Yeah, and
What's
it's
the reality of that happening if we're training you and we're, but
but it's so fear-based, right? Like the
oh,
worst
yes.
scenario. And I tell you what, anxiety is a bugger, and it like is the most jealous of the emotions. And once it gets control of you, it does not stop. And so all of a sudden, you're just thinking, I'm going to become homeless. And then what'll happen? And then what'll happen? And then what'll happen?
Oh.
And you're like swirling around in this anxiety world. And so I love that you're stopping. That is kind of a super highway, right? You're
Yeah, oh yeah.
stopping and creating branches. Like, what else can we imagine in this space? Right.
Exactly. Exactly. So talk to me about how personally your journey and your working with your clients fulfills your purpose.
Yeah, I love story. I think it I'm a narrative a trauma coach, right? So we talk a lot about going back into these stories that somebody has had, trauma or something difficult that happened. And as they're telling the story, they get back into it, but somebody's focused with them. And so I love doing that work that, I've had several people who have read my book and they're like, changed my life. It helped me recognize the system I was in. The books landed in some interesting places like family law, where there's a lot of domestic violence that happens that looks like me, like people that, are not walking around with bruises and black eyes, but have pretty significant domestic violence has happened to them. And so that's been interesting. And so I feel like great purpose around being able to share my story and help people along the way as they discover. So, the book has got this psychological bent in it because I really needed to understand how I found myself in this place and then how I got out.
Well, I think a lot of times, if you know that whatever you're going through has been studied and you're not alone, and there is some logic around how you're feeling, how you're acting, whatever the case may be, it certainly takes a lot of that. I must be horrible away. If you're not the only one, then
Right.
you're not alone. You're
Not alone.
not alone. When I was young, I was kind of a black sheep. And I grew up in a very structured religious upbringing as well. Not as difficult as yours, it sounds like, but they're definitely strict. Definitely, here's right, here's wrong. And I would call myself Judas because I always felt like no matter how much I thought about it, or how much I agreed with it, or how much I whatever, I always seemed to veer on the side of the rebel. And so I told myself for a long time before I went into therapy that, and I have clinical depression as well, but I would tell myself, maybe God made me to be Judas. Maybe that's why I can't be good. I know. And so you wonder sometimes when you're working with folks, where did they get this idea about themselves? And how deep is it?
And I think it's so hard because you have these authority figures with the God card telling you things. I remember going to a church and they would say, if you don't leave the building feeling terrible about yourself, we didn't do our job. Right? So you need to be reminded that you're a big sinner. And I carried that with me. I was a good student, went to college. A nice person, like kind was always one of my values, be kind. And I somehow got picked up a message at a church that said, I need to be broken because I'm bad. Right. And so I would tell this story to people that I needed to be broken. And after I ended up marrying my husband, that my husband was the one who God sent to do that. Like, how effed up is that? Right.
It's one of the questions that I like to ask, and I don't know if you have questions like that really hit the nerves a lot is, and I ask this of leaders, what is it that you're pretending not to know?
Ooh.
And now it's not my question. It was from Susan Scott in her book, Fierce Conversations. And this was before Crucial Conversations. But a lot of times, what I will find myself doing is asking myself that question. So when I'm deluding myself, or I'm on purpose lying to myself, which happens to all of us because we've made up these stories and once we get in our head, here's who we are, then everything has to follow to that, right? Or else we don't know who we are. And it's just amazing how what are you pretending not to know kind of brings out, particularly in leaders, what their contribution to a situation is, right? And so that's part of it. Are
And I,
you living this life because you're choosing it? What are you getting out of it, right?
And I love that Mary Oliver quote, tell me what is it that you want to do with your one wild and precious life,
I
right? Is
love
this
that
what
too.
you want, right? Because you can choose differently. But that question, say that question again.
What are you pretending not to know?
Also leads to that complicity, right? And I recognize places that I've been complicit of being a part of this system and the teaching and the pain and suffering I've inflicted on other people. And so don't pretend that you don't see what's going on around you when you are part of these systems. Say something, See something, say something.
Exactly. Boy, makes me want to shout it from the rooftops in the current political situation. Sorry, you're seeing my Democrat come out.
Yeah, you and I both over here.
it's just how much more deluded can we be in just in general? And I think what probably the greatest fear that I'm coming across lately is people are afraid to know themselves. And I'm not sure that I've seen that until like maybe COVID is when I started noticing it.
Well, and I think it's so interesting, Julie, because you sounds like you did not fit the mold,
No,
right?
not at
You didn't
all.
fit the mold. And so if we're choosing to actually know ourselves, there is that kind of residual question of saying, if I show up for who I truly am, will I fit? And if I can't fit, then I'm Judas, right? Then I'm out.
Yeah, but I just
And
changed the mold.
yeah. Well, and I think you got to tell people that. That's amazing because people are so fearful of not belonging, right?
Yeah, they are. And even today, sometimes I wonder, is there a place where I feel like I belong 100%? And, part of it is it's okay not to belong 100% in any one place. Maybe where I belong is with myself
Yes.
and, my higher power, if you
Yes.
have one, your higher power,
Yes.
because we're all unique. And shouldn't we all kind of be?
Yes. And I, you know, that's when I meet with my clients, that's the first, our first session is going, I want you to finish your work and be able to walk into a room and go, here I am. Not, what do you expect of me? Where am I on the ladder of success compared to you? You know, like, here I am. Here's my gifts, my unique self. Let me give it away. Right.
Yes. And how can my unique self help your unique self?
Yes.
What pieces are you missing that I have that I can give to you?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And back and forth like that is perfect. I think that's
Yeah.
perfect. Well, I can't wait to read your book, I have to
Thanks.
say. I'm definitely going to do that. Are there any before I ask three questions at the end of every interview. Okay. And I love asking these questions, but I want to give you the chance to share any words of wisdom that we haven't talked about to share with the folks who are going to be listening.
I think just taking the time to sit with yourself and going, what am I really believing here? What is the story? You know, I have a the acronym SPACE, just to say stop, pause, get present, right? Take some big deep breaths and ask yourself in the middle of the day, what am I believing about anything? What's in my subconscious? Pull it out and then say, what, how would my life be different if I changed my belief? And then take action on it so it actually sticks, right? So it's stop, get present, ask yourself.
There we go.
Pause.
Pause.
Pause. Yes.
It's for suicide awareness, but it's also reminds me every day, pause. When I get into a spiral, pause. Hit that
Pause.
pause button.
And you know, this word repent, when I actually started writing my book, the Hebrew word for it is teshuva, and I'm probably saying that wrong, but what it actually means is to go inside. So I'm going in life and something's not going right for me. I'm going to go back inside because my wisdom lies there and let me figure that out. And so it's not this like drastic, you're wrong and go right. It's like, let me go back. This is where I find my wisdom. So,
Absolutely.
yeah.
Because we're all unique and different and
Because we're all
wonderful.
unique and different
And wonderful.
and wonderful.
Okay, there you go. All right. So, my first last question is, can you close your eyes? In your mind's eye, what do you see when I say wise woman?
I see someone smiling and full of joy and excited for the day.
Oh, okay, you can open your eyes now. That's beautiful. Thank you. Now, the second last question is, where do you like to roam, Michelle?
Oh, I have an expansive. I like going anywhere. I love understanding culture and people and food and you know, I walk all the time. So if I'm thinking roaming day to day, I'm walking and I'm meeting all the people along the way. And starting awkward conversations that
Oh.
but I, you know, I love travel. I love meeting people and the cultures.
I do too. Last question. What makes you restless in a good way?
Lack of change. Too much routine.
Absolutely. Too much routine. I love it. I love it. It makes me restless too. That's why I live in an RV.
And also like answers that are just certain, like no, they're not, you know.
Yeah, there's always an extra angle you can take on it. There's always another connection you can make.
Yes.
Oh yeah. I think we're soul sisters.
We
I
must be. I would agree.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much, Michelle, for being on
Yeah,
the
thank you for
show. Thank
having
you
me.
for bringing all the wisdom that you've brought. Thank you for your courage in what you've been through already. And thank you for being willing to share your journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Julie. It's been great.